And just a word about the issue of pneumonitis. Obviously, in lung cancer, it's much more complicated than all the other diseases where checkpoint inhibitors are utilized. Any comments about your approach to diagnosis and management of pneumonitis? How often have you seen it with checkpoint inhibitors?
I've seen it in a few patients, and it is a challenge because usually it's patients they've already had some sort of treatment in their lung, or their cancer's in their lung, or their risk of pneumonia, and so you don't know. The most recent case I had was an older patient who absolutely was not going to have chemotherapy. We didn't have PD-L1 expression. She didn't have the tissue for the testing, but flat refused to have chemo and had bad disease within her lungs and was starting to become pretty symptomatic from recurrent effusions. And so I decided to start her on a first-line checkpoint inhibitor. It's like the one time I've done it without having had the testing done. And she was hospitalized within 2 days with an absolutely horrible pneumonitis, responded okay to steroids, but then decided, well, that's it, I don't want any more treatment, and decided to just go on hospice. And she did respond to steroids. She did get better. And so I think that in most cases, if we think of it and we start high-dose steroids pretty quickly, you can reverse it for most cases, but not everybody. But it is a challenge because so many of our patients do have that lymphangitic type growth in the lungs to start with, or they've had prior radiation where you're not really sure what's going on in that section of lung, or they get something that seems like a pneumonia. And so we grapple with it. It's a hard one. And I tend to be pretty quick to give steroids to patients in that setting if you don't know, because it's something that's fixable if we catch it fast enough.
Any comments? It seems kind of interesting. I don't know how, I'm curious how often it happens that he had MIs twice when anticoagulation was stopped. Have you seen that before?
Well, I think the kind of patient you're describing, yes, I can imagine. I have a very strong picture of this guy in my mind. It's a different patient population than who I tend to treat the most, but I remember from days when I was more in a veterans hospital situation and some of my patients who will come from a little further where it's just a different demographics where they are heavily smoking at high risk of cardiovascular events where there are patients. That's why they are on their anticoagulation. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I was curious about this patient because, you know, again, in the survey, we asked people to make comments, and I was curious about the comment you made, which is, quote, his attitude and relationships to his disease progression and multiple comorbidities was very positive, very realistic, an example to follow. I found that interesting.
Because he was very positive, and no matter how many times he ended up at the hospital, he would say, hey, doc, when are you going to give me my chemo again? And I'm like, well, every time I give you chemo, I send you to the hospital.
Was there an element of humor in your interaction with him?
Yes, a lot, a lot. We had a very good relationship. He just would not listen.
Any thoughts about humor in oncology, Estella Mary?
Well, you have to be careful because not everybody can get your humor. But I find that it's like any relationship, you know. I think that you need to make things lighter for patients and for families. And sometimes I find like just talking about something else, like, you know, what's happening, what were you doing? Like, I had another patient who was a musician, and we spent a lot of time talking about music, and he would bring me videos. And I feel like if you, not only humor, but being interested in the person and not the cancer, I think is really critical.